Hello again. My name is Peter Laws, and I'm glad to welcome you back to the Flicks the Church Forgot. We've spent most of the evening discussing the recent spooky BBC dramas just released by the BFI, the British Film Institute. And if you want to refresh your memory on that riveting conversation we had, then check out the first four episodes in this Christmas special. You'll find those up on the website. But tonight we're going to get a little bit more philosophical and look at the subject that I think, to be honest, I've never really heard anyone else talk about. That might be more to do with the company that I keep rather than the fault of others. But it's a subject that seems to have been little addressed in the world of the church as I have experienced it. And it's this: how does the subject of ghosts fit in with the Christian worldview? What are they? Do they exist? Or are they possible? Are they just manifestations of something more sinister? Are ghosts a paranormal red herring designed to keep people's minds from the idea of a creator? These sorts of questions that I'd want to explore. So that's what we're going to be looking at tonight. But before we do, can I just mention a practical matter? The storage space on my Podomatic account is reaching breaking point, and so I suspect that before long I'm going to have to start deleting old episodes. Now, I'd hope not to do that, but under the current storage plan that I pay for, there's only room for, I think, 2.5 gigabytes of material, and as the years go by, things are starting to fill up that quota. No pressure, but if you ever wanted to donate to the podcast, then there is a PayPal button on the site. And if there was enough donated, then perhaps I might be able to go up to a higher tariff. Or alternatively, if you're a podcaster out there and you have some suggestions of what to do with archive material, then let me know. Maybe there is some sort of other solution of hosting archive material in another place or something. I'm not quite sure how to do it, but ideally, I'd love all the episodes to be available for anyone who feels like searching through and listening. I sometimes check on my stats and find that episodes that I recorded 3, even 4 years ago are still being downloaded and listened to, and so it'd be a shame to dump all of that stuff. But hey, for now, how about we refill our glasses and turn our attention to the other side? I suppose before we talk about how ghosts fit in, or perhaps do not fit in, with the Christian worldview, I guess we are going to need to work out what we mean when we say the word ghost. Now, I'm held here by one of my favourite little reference books on my shelf, which is called The Chambers Dictionary of the Unexplained. And in there, it reminds us that defining the term ghost is quite a challenge. Because even though all of us have used the word ghost in our lives, heck, my 2-year-old son keeps running around at the moment, pointing in the corners and shouting, "Ghost! Ghost!" I'm assuming, or rather hoping, that this is just a game. But for centuries, this term ghost has been a fixture of all languages, really, and yet it's actually quite tricky to give the term ghost a precise definition. I mean, there are even reports of some people seeing ghosts of living people. For example, a visitor to Canterbury Cathedral in 1987 said he saw an apparition of a man called Terry Waite. Now, he's an Anglican envoy who was at the time not dead, but he was in fact alive and well. Well, maybe not well. He was being held in captivity in Lebanon, but someone claims to have seen him, like the ghost of a living being. But I think for most of us, we would think of a ghost as being a manifestation or an apparition of something from beyond the grave, not before it. And while there have been stories of animal ghosts, I think it's safe to concentrate on the mainstream idea of ghosts, and that is, of course, dead people appearing in or affecting our living world. Now, ghosts are a fairly universal idea in pretty much all of human cultures, and you can find them lurking about in the indigenous cultures of North and South America, Africa, Asia, Australasia, and the Pacific. And also, if we look through history, we see plenty of examples of clear and sometimes officially sanctioned worry about the dead possibly coming back to wreak havoc on the living. For example, in the UK and other countries, killers and murderers, particularly in the Middle Ages, were sometimes not only executed, but a stake was driven through their hearts. They might be decapitated or buried at a crossroads, or maybe heavy rocks would be placed upon their bodies as they were buried, because people were convinced that they might somehow return. Even back in ancient Greece and Rome, there were stories of ghosts where they're, you know, crossing the river Styx in the boat, where you've got the souls of the dead swarming around you. Yikes. But what can come as quite a surprise to some Christians, or rather a fact that seems to be largely ignored by some Christians, is that ghosts are both explicitly and subtly mentioned in the Old and New Testament. Maybe the most blatant example of this is in the Book of Samuel, which involves a witch from a place called Endor. I'm assuming that's not the moon on which the Ewoks live, or at least I pray to God that Ewoks don't actually exist. But back in the Book of Samuel, a mad and paranoid king called Saul instructs the witch of Endor to do something which is forbidden in the Old Testament, in fact something Saul forbids himself, and that is to make contact with the dead. But he desperately wants to speak with his dead mentor called Samuel. And so he asks to raise him, and sure enough, she does raise an apparition of him who speaks and for all intents and purposes appears to be a ghost. We'll dig deeper into this incident a bit later. The Old Testament book Isaiah 29 verse 4 mentions ghosts as well. It's quite fleeting, but it's still in there. Brought low, it says, you will speak from the ground, your speech will mumble out of the dust, your voice will come ghost-like from the earth, out of the dust your speech will whisper. Now, moving on to the New Testament, there's a moment when Jesus comes walking on the water and the disciples freak out because they think he's a ghost. Jesus doesn't seem to cackle with derision, point at them and say, epic fail, for believing in such nonsense. Actually, he doesn't seem to challenge that side of things. He's not a ghost. And yet he doesn't say, why did you mention that? In fact, in Luke 24 verse 39, Jesus himself refers to ghosts. He's just died and then come back in his resurrected body. And he says in verse 39, look at my hands and my feet. It is I myself. Touch me and see. A ghost does not have flesh and bones as you see I have. Now, whether or not Jesus believed in spooks or not is neither disproved or proved by the statement that he makes, but it certainly shows that ghosts were on Jesus' radar, that he referred to them in the context of someone who had died, i.e. him, and come back from the dead. And so he was fully aware of ghosts in culture and even differentiates himself from a ghost. Then when we look at the second book of Corinthians written by the early church uber leader, the Apostle Paul, we find him saying that there is a specific gift of the Holy Spirit given to Christians that helps us distinguish between spirits. Now, the implication being that there are good spirits and bad spirits. Does that just mean holy versus sinful motivations? Does he mean angelic versus demonic entities? Or kind and malevolent ghosts? Well, I've never really considered the spirits to discuss in that section to be about ghosts, but hey, you know, try to keep an open mind. Another key passage that is easily overlooked in this discussion is something called the Transfiguration, when we find in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, Jesus going up a mountain with two of his disciples where he has an encounter with two famous biblical heroes, that's Moses and Elijah. Now, these two guys were operating way back in the Old Testament and would naturally be long thought dead. And yet, here they are appearing to Jesus and some of Jesus' friends. Not only that, Jesus talks to them as well. Were they, therefore, ghosts? Well, it's not unreasonable to think so, but it's worth pointing out that both of these men had some rather unique endings to their lives. 2 Kings 2 verses 11 to 12 tells us that Elijah was taken directly to heaven. Does that mean he didn't die? Moses, on the other hand, is described as dying. Indeed, it actually says that God himself buried him in Deuteronomy 34 verses 5 to 8, and yet his grave was never found. And interestingly, in old rabbinic tradition, it says that Moses was also taken to heaven directly. So does that mean that these two super Bible stars didn't really die and therefore weren't ghosts as they appeared? There is a guy called Enoch, who's in Hebrews 11 verses 5 to 6, who is said to have skipped death completely and been translated to heaven. And I suppose the question is Elijah and Moses like this? Well, possibly. But it gets a little bit confusing when you read verses like John 3:13, which says, no one has ever gone into heaven except the one who came from heaven, the Son of Man. If John 3:13 is true, then it implies that Moses and Elijah did die like everybody else, which means their appearance in the New Testament suggests they are ghosts of some sort. And this is reasonable to consider, because just because 2 Kings says that Elijah was taken up and never seen by Elisha again doesn't mean he didn't die. The same with Moses, who we specifically learn was buried. The only verse I think that troubles me the most is Enoch 1 that says that he did not experience death. That's the tricky one. I'm not quite sure how to get my head around that. But anyway, even if Elijah and Moses were not ghosts per se, that passage still sets a precedent of someone living talking to another person who ought to be dead in terms of physics. And what are ghosts if not people who ought to be dead physics-wise and yet linger on? So ghosts are not exactly all over the Bible, but it's simply oversimplistic and I think blatantly false to suggest that ghosts, or at least the concept of ghosts, are absent from the Bible. And so if ghosts are in there, then how has the church responded to it? Especially when vicars and bishops might have people knocking on their door in the real world saying, "I live in a haunted house, we have a spectre. Come and sort it out." Well, some Christian traditions are open to the idea of ghosts being a reality, and some have very clear doctrines against the idea. And I'd like to take a moment to explore the difference in attitude to ghosts between the Catholic Church and the more fundamentalist evangelical Protestant churches. And of course, there's going to be exceptions on each side, and I don't want to generalize, but I think it's reasonable to say that on the whole, ghosts are seen as quite possible in the Catholic Church. But on the other hand, they are considered nigh on impossible, possibly heretical, in the evangelical Protestant circles. And this comes down to a key theological difference. Catholics believe in purgatory, while Protestants do not. Now, in a nutshell, purgatory is the middle ground between death and heaven, where dead people are supposedly purified in some way or punished for a while for their sins. I'm not a Catholic, so I don't understand the exact nuances of purgatory, but I think that's, in a nutshell, what it is. And so central to the Catholic idea of life after death is this notion of a middle step between death and eternity, and also a very strong sense of humans being both body and spirit. And so perhaps with this in mind, it's no surprise to see that Catholics are a lot more open to the idea of ghosts. For example, the Jesuit priest John Harden, in his Modern Catholic Dictionary, says that God may, and actually does, sometimes permit the souls of the dead to make an appearance to the living. The reason for it, though, is not just to freak us out, but to encourage us to reflect on death and eternity and hopefully to turn to God for salvation. Now, you'll find that in the lives of the Catholic saints that ghosts and apparitions do crop up as well. That's not to say, by the way, that Catholics encourage any sort of involvement with ghosts. Conjuring spirits and Ouija boards and seances and mediums and all that stuff, I think, tend to be frowned upon, just as they are in the Protestant church. Both Catholic and Protestant traditions tend to sort of outlaw that, not because they are useless or a waste of time, but because they may well contact some unknown spiritual force that for some reason God doesn't want us messing with. So neither group are encouraging people to actively go out and find ghosts or summon them. However, Catholics are open to them as a possibility and existing. And by the way, it's important to add that the belief in ghosts is not a dogma of the Catholic Church in the same way purgatory is. So you might meet some Catholics who believe and some who don't. But the tradition, I guess I'm trying to argue, is more theologically open to their existence. And it's also worth pointing out that there is a difference between the frightening, malevolent ghosts of all these horror films that we watch and the ghosts who are sent by God to encourage those to seek salvation. If the Catholic position is that a ghost is a dead soul permitted by God to encourage belief in him, then I suppose in some ways ghosts are like holy beings, or at least righteously sanctioned beings. So perhaps the work of anything more threatening or evil, the sort of things we would see in a horror film, would slot more neatly into the term demonic. So anyway, that's the Catholic position. Now, as some of you may know already, I'm from the Protestant tradition, but let me just say that I'm not really that into labels, and I consider myself a Christian, but I'm pretty open in terms of spirituality and learning from other traditions, and so therefore I'm quite willing to consider the Catholic interpretation of what happens after death, even though I'm not, like, by default from that tradition. Because after all, particularly in the subject of ghosts, this is what you might call speculative theology. It's just trying to get our heads around a complete mystery. And so while I would class myself Protestant, my setting out the classic Protestant view in a moment is not me necessarily saying this is my absolute personal position. I really am not sure on this whole topic of ghosts, but nevertheless, let me now explore the Protestant view on ghosts to see how it differs. Now, the main hinge of difference is again around this idea of purgatory. In short, Protestants don't really believe in it. They tend to believe that either people die and wait in some intermediary state until judgment, or they go directly to stand before God in judgment. By judgment, I mean to stand in front of God, who tells you if you're going to heaven or hell. I suppose that's in a nutshell. And the point is that this has nothing to do with your own moral achievements, but rather it all rides on whether or not you've accepted Jesus' forgiveness before you've died. So that's the classic sort of Christian Protestant type position. And a relationship with Jesus is the criteria for entry to heaven, because nobody is morally excellent enough to exist there. So we have to rely on the forgiveness of God. So in Protestant Christianity, there just isn't much room for the dead to loiter about, because they are sort of fast-tracked into their eternal destinations, or at very least, put into some sort of long hypersleep until judgment happens. So how could we possibly encounter the dead in the living world when they have already gone off on their trains to their destinations, as it were? Why would they hang about? And so because of this fast-track to judgment idea, you tend to find that Protestants simply see ghosts as one of two things. Either they are the product of overactive imaginations, or they are actually demonic manifestations. Now, these apparitions might even look like a loved one, but many evangelicals claim that they simply can't be dead because they must be in heaven or hell. The dead cannot loiter about on earth. And so, therefore, they can only be demonic. I mean, why would an angel impersonate a dead person? So it must be demons. In fact, some evangelical Christian commentators have very strong views on these ideas, and especially on those Christians who are willing to believe in ghosts. Now, listen to this from an article called "Do You Believe in Ghosts?" by a man called Rick Barry. He writes in his conclusion to this article, he says, "Why would demons want to deceive the living by impersonating the dead? As servants of Satan and enemies of God, they would have every reason to cast doubt on God's word and its warnings about future judgment. Getting people to believe in ghosts automatically forces them to reject key Bible verses like Hebrews 9 verse 27. Incidentally, that verse says, "And as it is appointed unto men once to die, but after this the judgment." Hence that fast-tracking idea. And then he goes on and says this, "Do you believe in ghosts? The question is huge. Coming to a wrong conclusion about the afterlife has eternal consequences, and the wrong choice on this side of the grave can condemn a soul to eternal agony on the other side." Pretty strong words. And I personally think he's stretching it a bit when he says that belief in ghosts means you automatically reject Hebrews 9:27. That verse just says, we die once and we face judgment. I'm pretty sure that even ghosts have only died once, and there's nothing to say that they don't also face some sort of judgment. And so I think Hebrews 9:27 can still ring true in a world where ghosts actually exist. Here's another article that I read from a website called What Christians Want to Know. This is by a man called Jack Wellman, and he said, this is very clear and strong, "If you ever see a ghost, you can be assured it is not the deceased person you are seeing, or someone who died that was unbeknownst to you. It is positively an evil spirit that is imitating the dead person." The Protestant position may well be right, but I personally just, I struggle to see this as black and white as that. There's just too many questions. I mean, with the attitude above, this idea that any sort of ghost must be demonic, well, the disciples should have quite rightfully rebuked Elijah and Moses on the mountain of Transfiguration, because they could have easily been demonic representations of these two men. But the tricky thing is, Jesus didn't rebuke them. He saw them as being exactly who they appeared to be, prophets that to all intents and purposes should be in a grave somewhere or facing judgment themselves, and yet were walking and talking in the living world. But if Elijah and Moses weren't ghosts, as some people claim, then what were they? Were they residents of heaven who were simply visiting earth at the time through some special dispensation from God? Well, if that's the case, then who says that God has not done that again? Or put it another way, is that what ghosts are? Dead people from heaven who visit earth for some reason? Who knows? I just don't know if it must follow that they are demonic based on these verses. And what about the moment in the Old Testament when Saul instructs this Ewok witch, or sorry, the witch from Endor, to summon up the ghost of Samuel? How does the classic ghost-free Protestant angle explain that? Well, I've read a few theories, and some say that actually this was not Samuel at all, but a demon. And some say the evidence for this is that the apparition made some false prophecies or false claims. For example, the ghost says that Saul's sons would die the next day, but in actual fact, they all didn't die. some of them survived. In their minds, the critics' minds, it means that it must have been demonic, or at least not from God. But, you know, I don't think that's a killer argument. Samuel said, "Your sons will be with me," but he didn't stipulate all of his sons. And also, I think there's something in these verses that is easy to miss at first. If you read the New International Version of this passage, the king says, "The king said to her, 'Don't be afraid, what do you see?' And the woman," that's the Witch of Endor, "said, 'I see a ghostly figure coming out of the earth.'" And yet if we read the King James Version, it reads like this, "And the king said unto her, 'Be not afraid, for what sawest thou?' And the woman said unto Saul, 'I saw gods ascending out of the earth.'" So in one version, it's a ghostly figure, and in another, it's gods. In some translations, I think it's even spirits. So what on earth is going on here? When she summons Samuel, is she also releasing into the world other spirits too? Are ghosts nothing more than spiritual gatecrashers who spot a rift in heaven or hell and slip through? And it's also worth pointing out that Saul recognized the ghost of Samuel. He asked the witch to describe him, and she said an old man in a robe, and he took that as being Samuel. And so we have a disembodied spirit who was wearing clothes still and was recognizable, which it's really in keeping with many of the ghost encounters that we read about today. Also, Saul contacting Samuel implies that the dead have some knowledge that is not available to the living, which again keeps cropping up in other ghost tales. I find this interesting as well. Why is the woman so shocked when Samuel appears? This witch, if she was accustomed to doing this, really shouldn't have been shocked to see this, but she seems surprised that this actually works. Could this be an implication that she didn't think she had the power to do this stuff, but on this occasion it just suddenly works for some reason, hence shocking her? Maybe God did this especially for Saul, much to her surprise. Or is it just that Samuel looks different somehow to the other specters she has previously conjured? The witch in Endor story is in the Old Testament is actually, I think, the oldest record of an encounter with a spirit in Western mythology. But I think its presence in the Bible is an intriguing one, which I find difficult just to explain away. Another Protestant objection to ghosts is sometimes found in the discussion of a story Jesus told about a rich man and a beggar called Lazarus. Both men die, and the rich man ends up tormented in hell, while the other ends up in heaven. And the man in hell talks to Abraham in heaven and asks for Lazarus to pop down from heaven to hell to help the rich guy out, to which Abraham says, "Between us and you, a great chasm has been set in place, so that those who want to go from here to you cannot, nor can anyone cross over from there to us." Now, this can sometimes be used to describe how the dead simply cannot be permitted to visit the living on the earth, but I don't know if that's what the parable is primarily about. The chasm Abraham refers to appears in my reading to be between heaven and hell, not between heaven and the living. Because Abe says, "Those who want to come from here, heaven, to you, in hell, nor can anyone cross over from there to us." So that's why the rich man suggests another idea. "Okay, so if there's a chasm between heaven and hell, send Lazarus to earth so that he might convince my family not to come here when they die." Abraham doesn't say, there's also a chasm between heaven and earth, so they can't go. He just says, let them on earth listen to the prophets and Moses, because they won't be convinced if someone rises from the dead. It just seems to me like a softer, less strict reason to me than this great chasm between the afterlife and the living world. And also, at the end of the day, there may be some who take this story as literally, especially as it's the only parable where Jesus names one of the protagonists, but I tend to think it's more of it is a parable, a parallel story, a symbolic story to help us learn how to be better people in this life and how God will honor those who seem worse off and downtrodden, like this Lazarus guy. And if it's literally real, then I guess when you are in hell, you can chat to people in heaven, even though there's a chasm, supposedly. That just seems unlikely to me. So it's a bit much, what I'm saying, is to hinge an entire theory of ghosts in the afterlife on one verse from a story that Jesus may well have simply made up to make a point. But on the whole, I think you can probably see, while Catholic Christians might be more open to ghosts, some Protestants and evangelicals just don't go for it, and they assume they must be demonic. And therefore, it's not a surprise to see in a recent Pew Research survey that in America, Christian evangelicals are the least likely people in America to believe in ghosts. So what are we to make of all this? Well, let's consider the classic evangelical view of ghosts, that they do not and cannot exist because all dead people go to judgment and cannot hang around in any way, and therefore the only solution is that reported sightings of ghosts are actually encounters with the demonic. There is actually a certain logic to this explanation. Demons, by definition, are going to want to scare people, I suppose, and make them doubt their eternal destinies. Or they might simply be wanting to detract people from the idea of hell by making us think that we all float around in a nice paranormal afterlife, and therefore, hey, why worry about eternal consequences? Because I'll come back as a ghost and sort of hang around my family then, you know. So I think it's plausible to think a demon might pretend to be a ghost to influence our attitudes to the afterlife. After all, it is true as well. We do tend to find a lot more discussion of demonic activity in the Bible as opposed to ghostly activity. However, I don't think it's always the case that a belief in ghosts would put us off the Christian worldview. In fact, I think if you were to find a staunch atheist family, for example, whose house suddenly started to experience poltergeist activity, and a church blessing helped to sort that out, that would only go to promote Christianity and the possibility of a world beyond the material. I guess a good film example would be like The Exorcist, where Ellen Burstyn, the mother of Regan McNeil, she goes and she tries to get all the opinions and help from all the official channels and simply can't and has to go towards the church, and the church sort of sorts out the situation. In other words, a ghost sighting by a person, I realize The Exorcist is demonic, but it's the same principle, I think. It's the supernatural. And so a ghost sighting by a person simply adds evidence to the existence of the paranormal. I don't think it detracts. And thus, in some senses, it strengthens the argument for a very supernatural concept like God, because it implies that the supernatural is a reality. In fact, in the Chambers Dictionary of the Unexplained, it says that a few hundred years ago, some Christians were using ghost stories as a rebuttal of atheist doctrines, particularly in the case of aerial phantoms, it says. Though, to be honest, I found no more information on that little tantalizing idea, but it is mentioned in there. So listen, in the end, my conclusion in this whole interesting subject might be as infuriating as it is honest. I got no idea. I just don't know. I'm a Christian, and I think there are reasonable arguments to say that ghosts could fit into that worldview, and I think there are reasonable arguments to say that they don't. And of course, I haven't explored the other important angle, which is pure rationalism. That's the idea that ghosts simply cannot and do not exist because there is simply no such thing as the supernatural. Again, of course, that's a perfectly plausible theory and certainly would appear to be the most logical theory at first glance. At the beginning of this year, I went on a ghost walk in my hometown. My hometown is a place that's sort of got a lot of Georgian history to it, and so we walked around the town and at night, and a guy was giving us evidence and examples of ghosts that are in our area. And I must say, I was really quite cynical for most of the thing. So many of the stories were things like, you know, in this house, somebody lost their keys a lot, and they think it's haunted by a ghost who steals keys. And yeah, it just sounds like a forgetful person. And so some of these things, you know, I have a fair amount of cynicism when I hear some of these stories, and yet theologically or conceptually speaking, I am open to the possibility that they still do exist, because there are other evidences out there which are more convincing. But I think for a person who believes in God like I do, then if you're listening to this, right, and you believe in God, even if it's like a tiny part of you, then you automatically sign yourself up for a world in which things can happen that spill over the realm of known physics. And not only that, I follow a faith that says that the death of people is not the end, and that there really is more to life than flesh and blood. And so with that in mind, and with some of these tantalizing biblical references on the subject, I have to simply say this: I don't know. It may well be that ghosts actually exist. It may well be that ghosts are simply demonic manifestations. I'm not ready to fall down on either side of the argument. And so when I sit and watch these horror movies or these gothic 70s paranormal dramas, perhaps I cannot simply assume that when I switch off the TV and climb up the dark stairs that the ghosts on the screen might not be crouching somewhere watching me with hidden eyes in the dark. Do I want to actually see a ghost? No, not really. Or at least I don't want to see one in my own house. It would freak me out. But I do think it would do something to my faith. It wouldn't bury my faith. I actually, in some bizarre way, I think if I saw something like that, it would enliven my faith. And the thought that death is not the end and having some sort of visual evidence of that is as reassuring as it is scary. Stanley Kubrick once famously said to Stephen King after reading his book The Shining, in a phone call, he said, "Don't you think ghost stories are inherently optimistic because they imply an afterlife?" To which Stephen King replied, "Well, yeah, but what about hell?" I wonder, where do you fall between those two opinions? And as we've sat by the fire for these last few episodes pondering this, we've talked a lot about ghosts, but I suppose it's time for us to draw this long conversation to a close. It's probably time for you to go home. But if tonight, as you sleep, you hear footsteps in your attic, and your door creaks open and some dark shape drifts towards your bed, I guess my question is this: what is that going to do to your worldview? Because I think in that instance, these sorts of philosophical discussion, this speculative theology I've been on about, they won't matter as much. It will be largely irrelevant whether the spectre is demonic, angelic, or from beyond the grave. In its purest terms, within that moment, whatever you will be seeing would be a statement, and it would be this: this is either my imagination, or there is something beyond the natural. And for me, that would just be a confirmation of something I felt off and on for the majority of my life, that there is something beyond the natural. Well, that's it for another episode of The Flicks the Church Forgot. Remember to follow me on Twitter at RevPeterLaws or follow my Facebook page at The Flicks the Church Forgot. And if you feel like donating to the podcast so that I can keep the archive available, then all donations would be gratefully received. Please do not feel under any pressure to do that. And hey, losing old episodes would be a shame, but it's not exactly the end of civilization as we know it. Well, thanks for listening. Have a very Merry Christmas. Oh, and don't forget, The Flicks the Church Forgot.